The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender equality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Womanity Project Live. I'm Celine Rosenthal, and she's back.
Yes, I am back and happy to be. I am Aurélie Harp, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
Before going into today's episode, we wanted to take a moment to reflect on the tragedy that happened at the Pulse in Orlando.
I don't know if you read this article on The Guardian about the powerful forces of sexuality and the tragic effect of shame, of belonging, of the desire to ruin what you feel you cannot have, some of the most powerful forces a psyche can contain.
The denial of who you are can cause pain and self-rejection, and so I challenge us to find a way to rise above this tragedy and answer hate with love. Like Lin-Manuel Miranda said, love is 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 love cannot be killed or swept aside. So with that in mind, this week we are interviewing Andrea Owens from Brooklyn. We met her a few months ago while doing our crowdsourcing campaign for the Womanity Project, and we received this lovely message from her. She said, I love your project. What can I do to help? And, well, we asked her if she'd be our guest.
Andrea is a young, beautiful, strong woman. She's a chiropractor and has been living in Brooklyn for the past year. She comes from a small town in Florida and decided after graduating from college to go work abroad.
We'll talk more about that next week. But today, we're going to talk about her hair and women's hair throughout history.
Andrea went to Amsterdam and then to Singapore. As a woman of color, she felt different. People were staring at her. And to her surprise, when she arrived, people wanted to touch her hair.
Singapore was it was like a big surprise. I mean, I went online and I kind of knew what to expect, that, you know, it's a tropical place, a tropical climate, a small country. And mostly it's the Asian population. So you have, you know, Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, different Asian groups. And at the time, I had like this afro. And I remember being on the bus and someone wanting to touch my hair. Because there's not, you know, there is diversity there, but it's not as prevalent, say, here in New York, where you have so many people from different, you know, backgrounds. And the stares I would get just from people looking at me, because they don't necessarily see somebody with brown skin all the time, or someone who has, you know, afro and thick hair. So they were just fascinated, and they wanted to talk to me. They wanted to know where I was from, and they wanted to, you know, just kind of get to know me.
Throughout time and across cultures, people have worn their hair in a wide variety of styles, largely determined by the fashions of the culture they live in. Hairstyles are markers and signifiers of social class, age, marital status, racial identification, political beliefs, and attitudes about gender.
In many cultures, often for religious reasons, women's hair is covered while in public. And in some, women's hair is shaved or cut very short and covered with wigs. Only since the end of World War I have women begun to wear their hair short and in fairly natural styles.
American sociologist Rose Weiss once wrote that the most widespread cultural rule about hair is that women's hair must differ from men's hair, and that during the periods in human history when men and women wore similar hairstyles, as in the 20s and 60s, it generated significant social concern and approbation. In ancient Egypt, women believed thick hair was best, and they used hair extensions and wigs made of human hair and sheep's wool. They even dyed their hair, and they wore wigs in a variety of colors, with blues and greens and blondes being their favorite choices.
Well, blondes have more fun.
In other ancient civilizations, women colored their hair, curled it, pinned it up in a ponytail in a variety of ways. They set their hair in waves and curls using wet clay, which they dried in the sun and then combed it out, or else they used jelly made of quince seeds soaked in water, or curling tongs and curling irons of various kinds. Hair could be lightened using wood ash, unslaked lime and sodium bicarbonate, or darkened with copper filings, oak apples, or leeches marinated in wine and vinegar.
Wow, I never learned so much about hair.
I know.
However, in the Middle Ages, when the growing influence of the church and his views on feminine modesty, women's hair were tied up and covered on most occasions when outside the home. For an adult woman, to wear uncovered and loose hair in the street was often restricted to prostitutes.
As we progressed past the 16th century, European women's hair became more visible while their hair coverings grew smaller, with both becoming more elaborate. Red hair was popular, especially in England, during the reign of Elizabeth I. Women used borax, saltpeter, saffron, and sulfur powder to dye their hair red, making themselves nauseated and giving themselves headaches and nosebleeds.
Ooh.
Quite the price for beauty.
Yeah. In the 1800s, American women started wearing their hair up when they became ready to get married. By the gay 90s, high hairstyles had almost disappeared from the landscape of fashion trends. The look of the Gibson girl was much more natural.
During the First World War, women around the world started to shift to shorter hairstyles that were easier to manage. In the 1920s, women started for the first time to wear a bob, or a shingle, or to crop their hair. Durable, permanent waving also became popular in this period, and many American schools and churches rallied against flappers for, quote, acting like men. To discourage girls from bobbing their hair, some pamphlets claimed it would cause girls to grow a mustache.
All right. By World War II, many women worked either on the land or in the munition factories. And as shampoo and non-essential items were hard to come by, fashion was often dictated by practicality. But the later 1950s brought the extravagant of the high bouffant and beehive styles.
In the 60s, many women began to wear their hair short in modern cuts such as the pixie cut, while in the 70s, hair tended to be longer and looser. Women straightened their hair with chemical straightening processes by ironing their hair at home with a clothes iron or by rolling it up with large empty cans while wet.
The 80s motto was, the bigger, the better. And the amount of hairspray we used surely put a hole on the ozone layer. But by the 90s, women were opting for more natural styles.
So we've discussed a variety of different ways that women have been wearing their hair throughout the years. So what about Andrea's hair specifically?
You said before that when you were traveling, you had like big afro hair.
Yeah, I had afro. And,
Right. So the history of black hair is very different, especially in the United States. For black women, the question of hair carries so much weight.
It's about self-esteem, identity, politics, economics, history, and race.
Traditionally, the peoples of the West Coast of Africa wore elaborate hairstyles, including locks, plaits, and twists. When the first slaves were brought to Jamestown, African language, culture, and grooming tradition began to disappear. Without the combs and herbal treatments used in Africa, slaves had to rely on bacon grease, butter, and kerosene as hair conditioners and cleaners. And light-skinned, straighter-haired slaves commanded a higher price at auction. And this color consciousness promoted the idea that darker skin and kinky hair was less attractive and worthless. In 1865, slavery ends, but whites looked upon black women who styled their hair like white women as well-adjusted, and quote-unquote good hair became a prerequisite for entering certain schools, churches, and social groups and business networks. In the 1920s, Marcus Garvey, a black nationalist, urges followers to embrace their natural hair and reclaim African aesthetics.
The Afro hairstyle, which emerged in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement, was a symbol of rebellion, pride, and empowerment. As black people protested against racial segregation and oppression, the eye-catching style took off, an assertion of black identity in contrast to previous trends inspired by mainstream white fashions.
You said before that when you were traveling, you had like big afro hair.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And now for people who cannot see Andrea, you completely shaved.
I shaved it.
So it's time for us to take a quick break, but we'll leave you with Strange Little Girls by Tori Amos. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn with Celine Rosenthal
and Aurélie Harp. So, Andrea shaved her hair. It's not every day that you meet a woman proudly admitting she shaved her head.
On the contrary, shaving women's heads has often been associated with shame, punishment, or craziness.
A woman's hair has long been regarded as the key to her femininity and an obvious symbol of her sexuality. Because of this, the image of a shaved head implies for many a certain defeminization and is still considered shocking.
Throughout history, women have shaved their heads out of convenience, to stay clean or as an act of repentance. In the late Middle Ages and early colonial period, the upheaval in the Catholic Church, widespread famine, and the outbreak of the bubonic plague gave way to violent conflicts, filthy living conditions, and inhumane methods of punishment.
Yes, and one of the most well-known icons of the era is the young French rebel, Saint Joan of Arc, who kept the hair cropped and wore men's clothing in order to avoid the sexual advances of men throughout her military career. Ultimately, it resulted in her receiving the death sentence in 1431 after she was convicted of heresy by cross-dressing at barely 20 years old. Executioners forcibly shaved her head and burned her, not once, but three times at the stake. The Industrial Revolution gave way to rapid expansion in city populations, which was matched by a rise in poverty and filthiness. Unemployment put many young women on the streets for work, or otherwise, making them perfect candidates for religious conversion.
One of these women was Anna Sigalov, who in the 1890s was plucked from the dance floor of a club in Coney Island and taken into custody by the Episcopalian nuns, against her will. Sigalov was enrolled in the House of Mercy at Inwood, a reform school for fallen women, where sex workers, club dancers, and rebellious teenagers alike were kept under lock and key with the aim of converting them into respectable women. The nuns took to shaving the girls' heads when they misbehaved. Because of this, Sigalov filed grievances and became the center of a scandalous news story. She said, "We find the girls do not like to lose their hair," and one of the nuns told a reporter, "and that the fear of having it cut off tends to make them more obedient." The house was shuttered by the 1930s and demolished soon after. After World War II, French women accused of sleeping with German soldiers were publicly humiliated by having their heads shaved. Interestingly, many of their prosecutors were German collaborators themselves, hoping to distract from their own crimes. Les femmes tendues, or the shorn women, did I say that right, Orly?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Merci. Were paraded through the streets, bald and stripped to their slips, with swastikas painted on their chests and foreheads, oftentimes with their own lipstick.
Some 20,000 women were reported to have committed collaboration horizontale, and were shorn accordingly. Sadly, what is absent from these reports is whether or not these women consented to their crime, meaning that many women may have been punished and shamed for their own rapes.
Perhaps the most recognizable image of a woman who shaved her head in recent history is that of, well, Britney Spears during her famous 2007 meltdown. Raised by Disney and groomed for sexual stardom, she was arguably poised to snap.
A woman's sexuality is often seen as a threatening force, and removing her hair is thought to neutralize its potency. In response, many women shave their heads as a statement of power by reclaiming control over their bodies and celebrating the right to express themselves how they choose.
So, anyway, Andrea chose to shave her hair. Why?
I did. I shaved it. I don't know. I just wanted to do something different, something that I knew that I would be afraid to do. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it because it's just hair. And so I shaved it. I didn't do it myself. I went somewhere and the barber started cutting it really, really low. And he was like, all right, tell me how you like it. And I was like, no, I think it's pretty good. And so he cut even more off. And I don't know, something about having my head shaved, and I've had it like this for a long time now. It was just something I wanted to try, thinking that I would just, you know, pass and I would grow it out, because it used to be long too. But I love it now. I enjoy it. it was just something I started out just saying I want to try it and see how I like it, and now it's kind of stuck with me. And I don't know, it's weird, but I love it.
It's only since the 1970s that the women's lib movement took the shaved head and came to be associated with control and nonconformity. Some women started to shave their heads themselves, not so much in loyalty to a divine patriarch, but to destabilize notions of traditional femininity and to embrace radical notions of gender preference and performance.
Remember Grace Jones, the fabulous and unique 80s pop icon who presented a gender-bending and powerhouse persona that transcended social norms and aesthetics boundaries? In her memoir, I'll Never Write My Memoirs, Jones says, "My shaved heads made me look more abstract, less tied to a specific race or sex or tribe. I was black, but not black. Woman, but not woman. American, but Jamaican. African, but science fiction." She even said that shaving her head led directly to her first orgasm.
Well then, an equally dynamic and controversial star, Sinead O'Connor, shaved her head after record executives wanted her to take on a softer, more sexualized look by wearing shorter skirts and keeping her hair long. She refused and went straight to the barber to get the rest of her hair buzzed off. O'Connor is quoted as saying that she intended to opt out of the male fantasy, saying that it was dangerous to be female. In the male-dominated music industry, she had entered at an age of 17.
What about Andrea? How about shaved hair make her feel?
I love it. Because I don't think my hair defines, like, if I have long or short, if I have afro, if it's straight, if it's curly. Because it doesn't define me. And sometimes I do get stares, and, you know, I've had people say negative things about it. I've had people say positive things about it. But in the end of the day, I'm very comfortable in my skin when I wasn't before. So now I'm so relaxed with my clothes that I wear, my hair, everything, or my no hair. I'm very relaxed and comfortable. I love it. I don't feel that what someone else thinks or doesn't think is going to affect how I feel about myself. So I'm very good in my own skin, so I love it.
Great. And you said, okay, I wanted to not be afraid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Like, how did that come?
Because I felt like I was spending so much wasted time on fear and being either not smart enough or not good enough, or what are this person going to think about me, or is this, you know, getting a tattoo, is that going to bother, you know, am I not going to get a job because I have a tattoo, or I don't wear dresses all the time, what are other people going to think? And it was so much wasted time on that nonsense that it was physically draining. And I was so tired of that feeling, just a feeling of just emptiness. I'm like, this is a waste of time. I'm so grateful for what I do have. And it's like, why do I have this fear? You only live once. Enjoy the life that you have. Why worry about how long someone's hair is, or if someone wears dresses every day, or if someone has a tattoo, or if someone talks with a southern accent, or if someone's skin's too dark, if someone's skin's too light. It's just all these issues that makes no sense. So I put all that behind me, and I focus on now on things I want to accomplish going forward, or where I want to be in the next few years, or what I want to accomplish here in New York. So I don't know. Kind of grew out of my shell and broke it and pushed it and kept forward.
But were there a time as well when you felt you needed to dress a certain way, you needed to be a certain way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, being raised in the South, I don't know if this necessarily has anything to do with it, but in particular, like, I think, even, you know, some of my family members, when I shaved my head, they thought that something had happened. They thought something was wrong. Like, you know, I was going through this emotional crazy phase or whatever. And they didn't like it. And they made sure that I knew that they didn't like it. And I had even, you know, people that I hadn't seen in years, friends from, like, or people from high school. They were like, well, why did you shave your head? I'm like, I don't know. Why did you perm your hair, you know? Or, you know, why did you do that? People do things because they want to. What's the big deal? Or I had someone once say, you know, well, why don't you wear dresses? I was like, well, why don't you wear dresses? You know, because it was a guy. And I was like, I wear dresses if I want. And if not, you know, I wear pants or, you know, I wear onesie or whatever, shorts, whatever. I was like, I'm my own person, aren't you? I don't greet you with why did you cut your hair or this, you know? And I don't know, it was, sometimes people come to you and they can bring that negativity for no reason, unprovoked, just some random stuff. And like I said, I've, now that I've put that shell behind me, if I want to wear pants every day, I'll wear it. If I want to like grow my hair out, I'll grow it out. If I don't want to, if I want to get a sleeve tattoo, I'll do that. You know, I'm grown. So I feel like, yeah, there was, I did get a lot of negativity, mainly about my hair, more than anything else. As if hair is like somehow something that's so important that you can't live without. So trust me, I'm in New York where it's freezing in winter. So I have lots of hats. But yeah, so yeah, that's how it was. It was weird. And I still get it today, but I don't care.
You've been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn.
And you can tune in next week at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And next, coming next is Sin Smith Radio Theater Collage. Thank you, everyone.